So last time we were talking about preview. They wanted to use what I've done about preview to talk about five representatives of five.
More generally, groups given by generational organization.
So it's a very easy way of defining groups, describing groups. Let me recall from what they did last time, so I actually put the stats, and I took X inverse to be the stats, X inverse, X and X, so I regarded this as a joint set from X, and just sort of a collection of new symbols, one for each element of X. I took this to be the set of words. X mean an X inverse, so all strings of symbols taken from this set, and I put an equivalence relation in there. The words were equivalent if they had the same reduced form, which is remove the pairs X, X inverse, X inverse, X, and the group on X was cancel, regard the elements there as elements of the group with no other position besides the just canceling, and it was a free group, and this is a free group on X. So in fact, it was a group, and it was a group with a property that one way to define it is group has a universal property that is F from F from X to, and there is a map, X goes to Fx, or F of X, and F from X to G is a map function, and G is a group, then there is this, and I feel the homomorphism such that we go X X to the universal map, given any map from X to a group, there is a map from FX to a group, to G is a homomorphism. So that's the, if you define the free group on X as being the unique group of the isomorphisms that has this property. So we constructed FX explicitly, but it's characterized by the universal property. I showed, so you have two groups that have, you have two groups that have this universal property, then there's going to be a map from one to the other because of the universal property of the one, and map from the other to the one by the universal property of the other, so the area is one. Okay, that's three groups, and now I wanted to talk about groups that are not so free. They have so the idea of a free group is that you take a bunch of elements and you make a group with these elements and you write down all possible products and you don't impose any conditions beyond what you need for you to be a group. Right? You have to have the law, of course, and the identity and inverses. That's why, that's the one thing that you have to put in, is the inverses. So now, we want to go one step beyond and say, well, I want to start with a set and some equations among the elements of the set and make the bigger group I can, where it's generated by the set, but then the element of the set satisfies the equation. So for example, you can try and say, I want a group generated by X and Y with X squared equals 1, Y equals 1, or E, and X, Y, X equals Y inverse. So what do I say? I want a group that has two generators and the generator satisfies the condition. So if we sort of start writing all possible words in X and Y, and every time you find a square of an X, you get rid of it, and a fifth of a Y, a star of a Y, you get rid of it. Every time you get an X, a Y, and an X, you can replace it. So you can organize your group. And so I'll let you think about that, but you see that you end up with a group of 10 elements. But I'll do sort of a generalized version of this in a moment. So, but you first have to formalize. But you could get a group, a smaller group. I mean, there are many groups that satisfy the equation, but if you want to make the biggest group that satisfies the equation, you get a group of 10 elements. And I want to formalize this idea of how do you describe a group with, you know, by a system of equations. So that's the idea of generators and relations. So the equations themselves will be elements of the set of words. So given X and R inside of the word, so here the equation here is not quite an element of that X, but I could really write it like this. And so if I write all my equations as something equal to E, then the something here is an element of likewise. So I want to start with X, set X, and an element R in that X, and I want to construct, a group generated by X. So it's going to be a group that contains X as a subset, so that X generates this group, and such that for all R in R, a group G, R equals G in G. So meaning that the word actually gives you the trivial group, the trivial element. So for example, if you wanted a group here like this, okay, well, can I do that? Of course I can. I can do anything I want, as long as I don't violate the axioms of group theory. And this doesn't, so what am I going to do? Well, I say, how can I do this? Well, think about it for a second. If this group exists at all, it's going to be generated by X, so there's a map from X to G. So if this group exists, there exists a map from X to G, putting the set X inside of G. So there exists an F tilde from Fx to G, because our free group is a universal guy that's so we get that. This condition here means that N F tilde of R is equal to E for all. So that's what it means to take this condition, the element of R being EEG. So, you know, just take the word and put the word inside G, and it's for all I and I. Well, what does that mean? It means that R is a subset of the kernel of FQ. So if this group exists at all, it has to be a portion of the free group by a subgroup that contains R. But that tells us exactly what to do. So let's find a subgroup, well, a normal subgroup that contains R. And then we get done. So, but then, you know, you get, if you want the biggest group that has the property, you want the smallest normal subgroup. So let, so given R, inside that X, consider its image, so let A sub R be the smallest normal subgroup of FX containing the image of R. So FX is a set of equivalent classes of words. So if you have a set of words, you can consider their equivalent classes. You can regard R as a subset of FX if you want for the equivalent classes of elements of R, the elements of FX. Now that you have R inside FX, you can ask for the smallest subgroup that contains it, smallest normal subgroup. So it's going to be the intersection of all the normal subgroups it contains. And the intersection of all normal subgroups containing a set is a normal subgroup. So, of course, they have to prove that this is a normal subgroup. But I know that the intersection of all subgroups contained in the set is a subgroup. This is a question of section normality. Okay. So we have a group based R. So this line, the definition, the group with generators acts and relations set of generators, set of generators, set of relations R is, well, I denote like this. So if you want this, is that xy dash x squared, xy squared, xy. So that's the notation. Denoted by is defined to be what FX module is subgroup H of R. And just like in the case of free groups, they have a universal property. So maybe so that's the group generated to F by X with relation to R. And the free so what's the universal property? It's exactly the same as we had before. So the term X is a set R is subsequently of X. And Z is a group. And F is a map from X to Z. First X. F of R equals E for all R in R. Well, what does that mean? What do I mean by that? So the extension. Then there exists a map. I don't know, F from XR to G. So with the same diagram, you got X to G, X to XR, maybe a by the morphism theorem, You got a map, we got a map from that thing. Well, I knew of the kernel that you were in 2G, right? Every time you have a map back to G, it's going to get a map from FX more to the kernel of the map to G. I'm just sending the cosets to evaluate any representative of the cosets. And so, for the supply, this is an optional. Have a map from the friend to the job. True. And in fact, also I'll do more generally approved. A little file prove that if N1 and normal in N, 2 normal in G, there is a map G mod N1. So it's just a matter of sending a GN1 and GN2. And you have to show that this matter goes fine. So that GN1 G prime N1. What does it mean? It means that G is G prime N and N1. But so as N1 is prime N2, we have G equals G prime N10 with N and N2. So G N2. So that map is all defined and it's clearly due to our morphism, so yes. Now you might be taking topology, and if you're taking topology, you're going to see groups given by generators and relations all the time, but fundamental groups usually come like that. So here's an example. So this is not an example of fundamental group, of course it is, but so here's an example. Okay, so take the plane minus 3 points. One, two, three. So what is P1 of R2 minus X1 and X2 3? Well, that's kind of a silly example because it's so you take a base point X0, so you have these loops, and you can show that every path is homotopic to one of these three loops. M1, M2, M3. But the only thing is that if you go we're going to have a free group.
right?
Yeah, you know,
I wasn't saying the sphere, but that I could have a model of so. If he has 2 minus 10. That's what I wanted to do. But then, on the sphere, if you go, so gamma 1, gamma 2, gamma 3 is something holotropic to this, and on the sphere you can pull it out this way. So on the sphere you get, this is the identity. So this is, I'm not teaching topology, so excuse my drawings and my, but what you learn is that this is generated by gamma 1, gamma 2, gamma 3 with the relation gamma 1, gamma 2, gamma 3. And, well, it turns out that this is isomorphic to a free group with 2 generators. But it's actually given as a group of generators and relations. To do, for example, to take a compact surface, then you can take this loop, gamma 1, and then this one here, gamma 2, I'll make it to go, I'll use these numbers, A1, B1, A2, B2, and S, the subject of unit 2, then the phi 1 of S can be proved is A1, B1, A2, B2, so I have 4 generators and one relation, which is A1, B1, A1 inverse, B1 inverse, A2, B2, A2 inverse, B2 inverse. There's a picture you can draw that makes it clear that you follow this, follow the same path here. You see that stuff. Yes. Well, you have 2 generators, but you can map, you know, if you map that group to the group in generating 2 things, say, gamma, and so say, you map it to the group generated by X and Y, by mapping gamma 1 to X, gamma 2 to Y, and gamma 3 to X inverse Y inverse. And then you prove that it's an isomorphism. So the point is that you can solve for gamma 3. Right? So we have gamma 1 times gamma 2, gamma 3 equals the identity, you can solve for gamma 3. And it's, so you know, so gamma 3 is like a, you know, variable that you can throw away. You have to do an intercopulation to actually prove the design in the market, but that's the idea. This one here is just removing the gamma 3. And that's not a proof that it's not free, it's just sort of an indication that it might not be free, but you can prove it's not free. And in general, the fundamental group of a circle of given G is generated by 2 G things, B1, B1, A, G, B, G, with one relation that looks exactly like that, the problem is from I from 1 to G. AI,
So
even exclusion generic organization is not responding to the cause. I want to give some examples of which may not see so much in the college, finite groups given by generic organization. So an example is a dihedral group, which you might have encountered as symmetries of an endoron. So that's the general example of the first example that I gave, is a group generated by two things, D sub n, sometimes it's called D sub n, but that's called D sub 2n, x squared, y n, x y, x y. So note the first thing that this group is non-commutative because x, so I'm requiring x, y, x, which is x, y, x inverse. So x, y, x is the same thing as x, y, x inverse because x squared is 1. The squared is e implies x is x inverse. And this is this, well this is y inverse. So x does not commute with y, right? But it sort of, you know, it switches around. So what's happening here is that, well, so you can think of, when you move an x across a y, you're saying to change the y to y inverse. That means that a group generated by y is normal. Right? So the group generated by y is normal in Pn. And also, so if you have something like x to the i1, y to the i2, x to the i3, or maybe it's x to the j1, i2, y to the j2, x to the in, y to the jn. So just a general word into, so this is an element of fx, if you like. Right? So what can you do first? You can sort of use this condition to, so how would I write this? xy is y inverse x. So anytime you have a y on the left, you can move, a y on the right, you can move it to the left. So the y is commuted to the x by paying attention to the sign. So you can sort of take the y's here that are on the right and move them to the left of the x, as long as you invert it. So you can pass the y all the way that way, past the x and inverting every step. So you're going to end up, so you can do a bunch of operations like that and end up with all the y's on one side and all the x's on the other side. Right? So just use this almost commutation to move the y past the x's, you end up with something like that. Now x squared is always the identity, so you can replace x to the k by x or the identity according to either k is even or odd. So you're gonna end up with m x a mod 2. And why is it? I haven't used that. Now I can use this. So this argument even works if I omit this, I get the infinite dihedral group. But I'm going to use that. So if I dihedral group this to n, I can replace m by residue mod n. Because y to the m is periodic to n. So this is going to be m mod n. That's n mod 2. So every element in this dihedral group is going to be of that form. So there are, so there's going to be n choices for m and 2 choices for k, so the cardinality of dn is 2n. can do this for the simple property.
Ah! Why is it so bad? It could be smaller. So you have to prove that it's not and. But if it's and, then what happens? Inside here you have, well, one way to prove this cannot be smaller is that you have the group generated by y, which has larger n. So the only thing that involves y alone is the thing, so the group generated by y is the larger n. And because x does not commute with y, x cannot be a power of y. So x is not. So it has to be at least direct. So you could. And how do you see this group in real life? Take a polygon of n size on the plane, a regular polygon. Then it has symmetries. You can rotate the polygon by 2 pi over n, an angle of 2 pi over n. So you pick a group of order n by the rotation. That's the group generated by y. And you can reflect. You can choose one line going to through opposite. Cut the thing in the middle and do a reflection. And that's going to be the x. So you get a group of symmetries of a polygon of size n, which has there's an element of order n and an element of order 2. So there's going to be rotation by 2 pi over n. There's going to be reflection. So reflecting twice gives you that density. You're rotating. Rotation of 5 and n times u is identity, and you can check this. So what you do is you rotate, reflect. So that's what I mean. And one other example of groups given by generators and relations that is a following group. I'm going to take n generators and I'm going to put n choose two relations, which is that x I x j x I inverse x is inverse for all I. By the way, this expression here has a name. It appears there already. So it's useful to square brackets x, I, x, j. So this guy is one of those. So is this guy. Those guys are all. It's called a commutator. X, I, X, J. X, Y, by definition, is X, Y, and Y inverse. It's called the commutator. X, Y. And it doesn't have the name commutator for nothing. If x, x, y equals e, it's only x, y, y. As you can verify very easily. So what is this group saying here? It's a group on n generators, and I'm asking the generators to commute. This is called the free abelian group on n generators. Because I'm saying, well, it is a free group on n commuting generators, but all the generators commute and the whole group is a field. Check that. So one way to check that is to do a play game more or less like that one. Every time you have a word, because the generator commutes, you can take the x1 first, but every time you see an x1, it's moving past all the other x's, all the way to the left. And so you file all the x1s at the beginning, and then you do the same with x2, you move all the x2s past the other generators to the beginning, so you end up, so every element of A, we just can call it A sub n, but we expand something else, but every element of A can be written as x1 to the n1, x2 to the n2, xn to the n1. Okay. Right, by moving first x1 to the left, x1 to the left, then x2 to the left. What's the universal property? The universal property of the group is every time you map the set X to an abelian group, you get a map from this group to the abelian group. Because every time you map the set X to an abelian group, this thing is going to be mapped to the identity. And so that's why this is called a free abelian group on engineering. It's a universal abelian group on engineering. But it has a very concrete description because you can map this guy to the exponents. Right, so we still have a word where all the x's at the beginning and followed by all the y's and so on. This is going to be an element in z to the n, which is just Cartesian product of n plus z, and this is an isomorphism. So the free abelian group of n generators is just what you're calling the n copy group. So yeah, check that out. It should be very easy. Relations are elements of the freebooter, and that's true. So I don't think it's true, actually. I don't think it ever finally presented me. No, I don't think it ever finally presented me. It might be something. For example. However, for abelian groups, it's true. So, and then it has a set of generators. It's a bit of a grandiose portion of this guy, right? Because once you have the generators, you have to have a map of this guy. I don't think I've assigned any homework problem that requires it, so maybe not. I'm prepared to do that. I don't think I've assigned any homework problem that all the homework problems can all be done without it. Yeah, okay. Right. That works well. Any questions?
Are you recording the...
Yeah.
Do you want to...
You have the...